The meat cute. My breath trailed behind me like steam from a locomotive as I walked the two blocks to a little neighborhood bar on a frigid March night. I'd loved this part of Chicago's North Side since moving from the chaos of Boys Town a couple of years earlier. It was quieter, more residential, and held a surprise I hadn't expected. I'd spotted the rainbow flag above the bar entrance a few times when getting off the L. I finally looked it up on Yahoo, Google wasn't a thing yet, and confirmed what I suspected. It was a gay bar, not the loud, sweaty kind I'd grown tired of, but a cozy little place with friendly bartenders, smiling regulars, and pours generous enough to make you stay a while. Just two blocks from my apartment, perfection. It was crowded that night, the kind of crowded that feels like a party you were meant to find. Condensation fogged the windows, laughter ricocheted around the room, and the air smelled like beer and citrus. I snaked through the bodies to the bar, where the bartender slid me a cosmopolitan before I'd even asked. Apparently, he'd paid attention on my previous visit. As I sipped the cold tartness, I scanned the room, not looking for anything specific, just people watching and checking for eye candy. That night, the bold version of me had shown up, the one who moves through the world without apology. The one who had pulled me through my first lonely years in Chicago by forcing me out of my apartment and into life. That's when I saw him. At the far end of the bar sat a man with dark, wavy hair and a smile that could power the city grid. He looked familiar, which immediately made my brain do backflips trying to remember where I'd seen him before. My silent sleuthing was interrupted when a guy in an Armani suit on the next bar stool spun toward me. "Hi, I'm Greg. Can I buy you a drink?" he asked, clearly expecting me to say yes. "I'm Ron. Still working on this one," I gestured to my Cosmo. "But thanks." "I don't get here very often. What's this crowd like?" he asked. "I don't really know. I haven't been here in a while." I looked past him to see if I could see the handsome guy. Armani guy was probably handsome too, but I didn't notice. "Oh yeah? Where do you usually go?" "My sofa." He laughed. "That's a shame, Ron." "Great. Armani guy remembered my name, but I have no memory of his." I excused myself to the bathroom, maneuvering through the crowd. The bar was tiny and packed with people. As I serpentined around bodies to get to the bathroom in the back, I found myself face to face with the handsome guy I'd seen when I first sat down. He stopped me with a grin and a greeting. "Hi, I'm Ken. We met a couple of months ago." We were standing in close quarters, so I could see the crinkles around his eyes when he smiled. I remembered instantly. The night, the conversation, the paper, the guy journaling in a bar. It had been a couple of months earlier on Friday, January 12th. I'd seen him sitting alone, scribbling on beautiful paper with a fountain pen. A man who journals? In public? I was hooked. I asked what he was writing before boldly sliding the paper toward me to read. His handwriting was indecipherable, but that wasn't the point. "Just some thoughts," he said, smiling. "You come to a crowded bar to sit here and not talk to anyone?" I asked. "You're talking to me," he replied, that smile deepening. His eyes seemed to twinkle when he smiled. We hit it off immediately, bonding over improv training, mine at Second City, his at Improv Olympic. We talked, laughed, and connected until a friend pulled me away for drinks, and by the time I returned, Ken was surrounded. I went home furious and half drunk, leaving the world's most embarrassing voicemail. "I called dibs." So now, 2 months later, fate had corrected itself. Back at the bar, Armani guy was still trying, but Ken, playing darts at the other end, had my full attention. When I noticed a drunk admirer pawing at him, he met my gaze and rolled his eyes in return. Butterflies swarmed my stomach as he walked over to me. "Ugh. That guy won't leave me alone," he said. I leaned in conspiratorially. "Want me to help?" "How?" "Go back to playing, and when you need rescuing, tug your ear, like Carol Burnett." He laughed. "Really? Trust me." While I waited for the sign, I slugged back a few more cocktails and made small talk with Armani. Time seemed to stand still. I kept Ken in my peripheral vision while trying to be polite. I glanced over and saw Ken standing in a group by the dartboard where they were playing, tugging his earlobe. It was go time. I slither through the crowd to the back of the bar where the dart game was happening in true improv style, no plans for what I would say or do. They were all huddled around the dartboard when no one was throwing. I stopped short of the group of them. "What the fuck, Ken?" The crowd between us parted like the Red Sea. My voice was loud, angry, and thrilling. "What are you doing here? You said you were going to the library." The crowd fell silent. "Oh, hi, Ronnie," he said, instantly in on the bit. "That's all you've got? Hi, Ronnie," I said, hand on my hip. As he expertly stammered for words, his drunken admirer skulked away, hoping to avoid the improvised drama. "I just stopped in for a little while." "A little while? It's 10:30. Don't you think I was worried?" "I'm sorry," he replied so convincingly that I almost felt bad for yelling at him. "This has been coming for a long time. We need to talk." I lurched forward, grabbed his hand, and pulled him around the corner, out of the sight of onlookers, who all began to move away. Their night was over. Mine was just beginning. "You were amazing," he said, eyes bright. "I owe you a drink." We settled into two stools on the corner by the jukebox and fell into a time warp. Conversation was effortless. It was as if the universe had been holding its breath, waiting for us to meet properly this time. "I have a confession," he said. "I've been coming here every Friday since we met in January, hoping to see you again." "You have?" My heart did somersaults. He smiled shyly. "I just hope I don't put my foot in my mouth again." Then he reached down, pressed a button seemingly behind his knee, and click, detached his prosthetic leg, putting the foot near his mouth. "Too late?" he grinned. I laughed nervously. It was unexpected, to say the least. "I guess that ship has sailed." "I had cancer when I was 14, he said. "I lost my leg below the knee." I was stunned, not by the fact itself, but by the grace with which he said it. The humor, the complete lack of self-pity. He wasn't defined by what he lost. He was lit from within by what he still had. And I wanted in on that light. "I have a confession of my own," I said. "I haven't been here since that night because I thought I missed out on something special, and I didn't want to be reminded of it." It didn't feel daring to reveal this to him. Whatever pulled us together seemed to be pulling out my feelings, too. "I'm glad you came here tonight," he said sweetly, holding his beer bottle to toast. I clinked my vodka tonic against it. We left hand in hand, walking through the cold Chicago night toward my apartment. The air was sharp and bright. Everything shimmered with possibility. On his 40th birthday in 2005, I organized a party where guests, near and far, wrote a poem about him in any style of their choosing. There were limericks, haikus, sonnets, and more, all around the topic of Ken and his amazingness. Mine immortalized that night of our first meeting. I thought I knew what a partner was, but I didn't have a clue until one cold winter night in 2001 at a bar I ran into you. So handsome and so nonchalant, sitting there in overalls, writing. This man I knew I had to somehow meet. Would he be turned off by my wit, so biting? I grabbed the piece of paper from you, composed myself and read. My mind a bit hazy, I handed it back and thought, I have no idea what it said. But that was over 4 years ago. This wasn't a passing fling. My life has been an adventure with you, and I wouldn't change a thing. You're an amazing partner, an amazing man. You're all about the journey. Wanting to get to the destination, I certainly wish you'd hurry. That night in 2001 was our beginning. I didn't know it yet, but it would be the most beautiful story I'd ever live, and the one that would change me forever. Author's note. Every great love story starts with a ridiculous moment. No one tells you that the night you meet the love of your life won't feel cinematic at all. It'll feel awkward, funny, and strangely familiar. You won't hear violins or see soft lighting. You'll just feel something quietly shift, as if life tilts towards its true north. When I met Ken on a cold Chicago night in 2001, I didn't know he'd become my whole story, or that one day I'd have to learn to keep writing it without him. But that night, all I knew was this. Something extraordinary was beginning in the most ordinary place imaginable, a neighborhood bar, a cheap glass of vodka, and one very good reason to stay for another round. Looking back, I realized that night was more than a beginning. It was an anchor. Every laugh, every touch, every ordinary Friday that followed would become part of the map I still carry. When you lose someone you love, your memories stop being stories from the past and become coordinates for finding yourself again. The night I met Ken was when I first learned that love doesn't save you. It shapes you. And if you're lucky, it leaves behind a light bright enough to guide you home long after the changes. When I first wrote this story, I wasn't trying to capture a grand romance. I was just trying to remember what it felt like to begin. After loss, beginnings become sacred things, rare and radiant, like light through glass. Revisiting this story years later, I was struck by how ordinary the night was and how extraordinary it became. That's how love works. It doesn't announce itself. It just sits down next to you, buys you a drink, and changes your life. The meet cute isn't just how I met Ken. It's how I met myself before I knew I'd need to remember who that was.